It's all about us, and it's time to bow down.
I am so excited to be like doing it and recording and sitting here and talking. So let's just start with, how are you doing today, Dennis? How is today, first time recording, first time of us chit-chatting here, greeting you?
I am blown away, Reese, at this. I don't even know what else to say. For me, just the opportunity to talk about this and really to have found somebody, I mean, so randomly, so out of nowhere, and you know, and maybe we'll have a chance to share sort of how we connected in the beginning, because I feel like it is more than just happenstance, like, yeah. Everything, you know. So, I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to talk with you and share and learn, and ideally just have new experiences together and see where it goes. That's to me what I find super exciting.
Yeah, me too. For listeners, and sharing a little bit about our background and how we met, both Dennis and I are master certified life coaches, and we met in life coach training, actually. And post life coach training, I reached out to a few people that I had thought there could be potential with for working together. And over the course of the last maybe 6 months, it has been an ongoing conversation between us of, okay, we are clearly similar. We clearly have similar passions and intersections in spirituality and life direction and the way that we want to help people and the things that we want to create. What is that going to look like? What is that going to be? What is that going to feel like? And I think for both of us, it was this moment of divine timing, and there's been this evolution to clarity, I think, that we both had at this really beautiful time that gave birth to Bow Down, the Bow Down podcast. So if you are listening to this, thank you very much for being here, being a part of this journey and our journey. And we are so excited to be starting this with you. Is there anything else about our iteration that you would like to share, Dennis?
Yeah, I mean, I just the divine piece, the bringing together that things that shouldn't have happened. I wasn't even supposed to be in the particular training I was in. I ended up changing it at the last minute. I wasn't excited to be there. The fact is we barely even spoke, but yet felt this connection and on, not really knowing what we wanted to do. Even in my own life, our conversations, you know, over the last 6 months or so have really brought clarity into what I want to do and given me a courage that I don't think I would ever have. So I'm just so grateful. Again, that's why I say I'm so blown away here. It's, and I could go on and on about this, but let's get into the meat of things. So,
yeah, you know. I love it. Well, I wanted to start a little bit with about me, about myself, for people who maybe are hearing my voice for the first time. My name is Reese Brown, and this podcast is already something near and dear to my heart. More professionally, I am a life coach, but I also am the founder of a company called the Cohere Collective that helps people find and pursue their purpose. And stuff like this, conversations like this, is a huge part of my purpose, being able to have important conversations and share that with people just energizes me. Even as an introvert, leaving conversations like this, I'm always left filled up. And it's like the only time that I engage as an introvert with other people that I'm like, wow, I have so much more energy after than I did at the beginning. And that has created all sorts of things for me, from a life coaching practice to other podcasts, other content online, and the Cohere Collective is something that has continued to evolve with me. It has been around since 2017, before I went to college, when I was in high school, and now it is still here post-grad in young professional life for me. And so it really is a macrocosm of evolution that my life has really taken. more recently, coming into my divine light as a woman and in my holy femininity has been a really, really big part of my personal growth journey. One of the very first things that Dennis and I actually, or not very first things, but one thing that came up recently that we both share is this affinity for Lilith as a goddess to work with, as an archetype to bring into our divine practices, and embracing my ancestry and my identity as a witch, as a magical feminine being. Lilith has been such a big part of that for me. And really, over the last like 3 months, it has been a journey of integrating and alchemizing my shadow into the piece of me that kind of removing this idea of good and bad from my identity, that nothing is truly good, nothing is truly bad. There is only what is aligned, what is true, what feels like me. And I think working with Lilith and us having this similar affinity to her energy and to wanting to help women with this work has just blossomed into this being a place where we want to have conversations about helping other women do that too, and realize that we do not have to be this falsified version of ourselves in order to be accepted, in order to be successful, that true acceptance, true success, for whatever true actually means, is always going to be defined on our terms. And it's really been a place for me to go back and say, okay, well, what are my terms? What is the thing that I want to be and do purely for myself? And try and own that without guilt, without shame, and just letting it be for me in its own right, being okay. So today, in honor of Lilithian energy and the divine feminine, I have my bright, bold red lip on, which you may also see as the cover of our podcast as an important element. So that's just a little bit about me and this work. Dennis, I would love to hear more about this work for you too.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, so first of all, Reese, you look absolutely gorgeous, and all of the viewers out there, if you're listening, you're missing out. You truly look like a queen. So talking about that energy, it's there, and so regal, so majestic. So I'm just so honored. I'd love to share a little bit about my story because there's probably maybe a lot of questions from listeners as to why I'm here. What's my angle? I can understand why there might be a lot of mistrust. So maybe if I share my story a little bit just be transparent about who I am. I've spent 20 years plus in corporate America up until recently, and decided to, I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take the grind decided to go into mental health and actually finish my master's degree in professional counseling as well as coaching and just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was very good at my job, but and people generally was very successful, but it was so empty and it wasn't fulfilling. And the thing I enjoyed the most, honestly, was working with my direct reports, the folks who I could mentor, and it's what I really enjoyed. So I said, maybe I should do this for a living instead. Like, helping people seems to feel good. And having gone through a fair amount of therapy myself and betterment and of course the spiritual journey I've been on for the past few years, all roads lead to Rome, as they say, it's just so odd because I have no idea how I got here, but I can't imagine being anywhere else. There is something to this concept of surrender. And I, if you'd asked me even a year ago if this is what I would want to be doing or this is where I would be, I wouldn't know. So so one thing for the audience to know, I am neurodivergent, which I think contributes to my passion for what we're talking about here and my understanding of perhaps some of what women go through in the world, particularly in our culture and our society today, I don't, first of all, I don't claim to know everybody's experience or in any way, shape or form, but I feel I can hold this. I want to hold space, for stories to help, I don't know, to be a voice in out there that's speaking on behalf of those who may not know that they, you know, may not be able to. And so, yeah, you know, working on my spirituality, finding out who I am, all roads sort of led me to here. In that, I feel this need. The folks I work with today in my practice, the gaping wound is just this. The societal beliefs that have been imposed upon each and every one of them, and the gender roles, and I've done some work and studying in sort of feminist theory from a therapeutic perspective, as well as some other methodologies like internal family systems and things that really allow us to see what do we deep down believe, and my fundamental view is that so many women just have these deep seated societal views of themselves that hold us back. And I want to break those down in any way I can. So again, I said in an intro and I can't not do this. It is what I feel I was genuinely called to do. And so I'm here to listen. I'm here to advocate. I'm here to lend my, whatever I have to pour into the listeners, to pour into folks I work with, to ultimately have them live the life they dream of. Mm-hmm. And you know, I genuinely believe that every single person too, and we're focused on women and what we're doing here, and that's not to say men don't need the same thing, but that's not what I'm called for. That's not what we're here for. So this is not about elevating women over men or men over women or any of that. To me, this is about going after and helping and supporting and pouring into people, women who a group that needs. That needs advocates and men, yeah. Especially, I think, and that's why I want to be part of the solution and not part of the, not just complicit and or certainly even worse, part of the problem. And now more than ever, I think we need more men stepping up with this passion and this truth, because I don't like what I'm seeing out in the world, and I know yeah. You probably don't either. So
yeah,
I mean that's my story to a degree and my passion and. I look forward to all of the wonderful things we talk about and reach here.
Me too. It makes me think one of the first powerful women in my life, besides my mom, that I probably quote at least to myself on a daily basis is my great acting mentor, Catherine Hart. And when I was first getting into acting, I remember she told her acting class, if you can do anything else in the world, do that. And that was the biggest piece of advice she always gave. And for the longest time, I didn't understand it because I was like, well, I can do all sorts of things. Like I'm able to do things. I could be successful on any path I choose, right? Like I'm not dumb and I can do all these things. But then I began to really understand if there is anything else that your soul could do, do that. And until you find the thing, that is, there's no way I could do anything but this. Not necessarily like you got to keep looking, but I don't think you found the thing yet. And so to hear you say, I can't not do this, it just called that to mind of like, if there's anything else you can do, do it. And when you find the thing that you can't not do, man, stick with it. Stick with it, because that is sitting in your magic and in your power. And I think the other thing too that is just so powerful about what you're just talking about is wanting to listen, wanting to be an advocate, but that within that, it is also being a part of the solution, that there is this tension that brings a lot of beauty in, like you said, the surrender. Surrendering inherently is still an action. And so being able to hold both of those, I think is just really, really powerful.
Yeah, I love that statement about, you know, if you can do anything else, do it. What a lovely way of leaning into who you really are. Because I believe when you have that kind of desire, and I don't care what it's for, but when that desire is just so strong, it's because it's meant to be yours. Like, we wouldn't have that desire. I wouldn't have this passion if it wasn't what I was supposed to do. I can tell you, I've never had this passion in my life like this. For me, this is truly uncharted territory. You know, here there be dragons. And I'm looking forward to the dragons. You know why? Because that's where the growth occurs. I know I know nothing. I know I can't, in my own power, do this. I can't help a person. I have no... But with the bigger me, the greater me, the us, the I am, which is so... There's nothing I can't do. And I just love seeing what... You know, the I've seen such tremendous growth in me, but in those around me, just by leaning into this. And so, yeah, this is it for me, at least for now. Now that could change. I'm not going to ever, you know, but for right now, for the foreseeable future, I am thrilled to pour myself out. And again, I use that a lot because I, that's just what I feel in my heart. And it's, to me, that's a power. When you follow your heart, I mean, the head is going to yammer. Oh, no one's going to listen to you. Why would, you know, all of these things you could say, but that doesn't matter because I know I'm meant to do this. And I know I can be part of this. I'm not the solution, but I am there to support and lift up and use my every energy to encourage and strengthen and help. And I love what you said earlier about the shadow. And I think it's so powerful to really look at that shadow. What do you really want? And, you know, why? And is it okay to want that? I think there's so many forbidden desires that, and I don't know that I'm going to say women have them more than men do, but I think it's more acceptable for men to have desires. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they're more likely to voice them. And I think that's why society is where it is today, because we don't allow women to voice their desires. And to me, I will not tolerate that. I will do everything in my power to change that narrative. And I know I'm one person, but together, you know, there's such a strength when, I mean, you and I, our divine selves, link and do this. It's, I just trust that whatever comes out is gold because, you know, we can't do anything in and of ourselves, but together our power is multiplied. So right. I might be able to do X, you might be able to do Y, but together we can do X times Y or more. And that's true with everyone listening.
Yes, 100%. And even in the act of listening, I want to add person, but just creative, period, right? One thing I think about a lot in anything I create is the way that it inherently changes when you make it public, and this idea of like the private and the public, and anything created for consumption is not fully realized until it is consumed, until it is engaged with. And I'm not only thrilled to be here and be having these conversations with you specifically, Dennis, but also to see where the conversation goes after it is out there. I think that will necessarily and inherently change whatever this becomes. And so I'm just excited to see reactions of all kinds, truthfully. One other thing in terms of like your entry point into this work that I think is really important and really powerful is the way you kind of access this. And I love what you said about neurodiversity being an experience that allows you to better understand the experiences of others. And I remember when I was younger and I was first introduced into the world of social justice, being a woman was the way that I understood so many other things. And I think that a really big reason why a lot of men struggle to understand social justice and all of these vast array of experiences that you hear is because the straight white man does not have a lot of discrimination, right? And there's no entry point, no access point. So as a straight white woman, I'm extremely privileged, but the bit of plight that I have experienced by being a woman has been a really helpful tool for me to understand racism, to understand economic injustice, to understand, you know, the list goes on and on. And so I think also hearing you say that, it's a piece of the puzzle that I hadn't quite put together about our relationship and experience with this. But I think that that it just makes so much sense in my mind that you discovering this piece of yourself that is a part of identifying your own mask is what allowed you, or maybe not what allowed you, but is a really big part of helping others with their masks too. And also, please don't let me project anything onto that experience, but these are just thoughts that I'm having. I don't know if you would even agree with what I just said.
Oh, completely agree. So first of all, yes. I mean, I spent my life wearing a mask without even knowing it. That's right. The worst part. And I do wonder how many of our listeners, you know, may be somewhat aware of the mask because it no matter what, it hurts. I mean, you feel that mask.
Yeah.
You feel your smile painted on. You feel, you know, nodding along. You know, you feel the itchiness inside your own skin. Or I did, I think. And you may push it aside. You may pretend it's not there, but it is. And part of you knows that. And so for me, I think not recognizing for so long or ignoring the fact that, you know, I couldn't be who I really was. I had to, especially in corporate America, you can't be weird. And I'm weird.
Right.
I'll put it out there. Like, I mean, doing this podcast, I guarantee you people, you know, there's a part of me that worries who knows me or think they know me will watch this and be like, who the heck's this guy? But again, it goes back to, I can't not do this. I don't care.
Yeah.
I love my friends and I trust that they'll accept me the way I am. This is who I am, for better or for worse. And it's a unique experience when you realize you can appreciate the mask for what it is and say, thank you. I am incredibly good at masking and I am so grateful for that. And I want to be able to take that mask off when it feels safe to do so. And
right.
That's what I want for all of our listeners. Like, I want to create a place. We want to, but my passion is to create a place where we can go masks off. Even you and I can go masks off and encourage other people, that other women and even men, if you're listening, we need more advocates. Like,
yeah.
You know, please, like if you're, this is not, the door's open. There's no gatekeeping here with what we're doing. We want
totally.
Everybody, but yeah, I appreciate you noticing that too. The similarities there. And it actually came, you know, when I first found out I was neurodivergent, it was a very interesting experience. I lost it emotionally. And we were reflecting at this training course I was taking, we were reflecting how I felt or how we all felt. And for me, it was for the first time, it felt like I could breathe, but I didn't realize I wasn't breathing before. I always thought I was breathing. But being able to let that mask down was so unique and so scary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, can I do this? Is this safe? I wonder how many of our listeners share that experience where maybe they've tried to, you know, show who they are. They tried to let the mask on. They tried to want to make noise and be seen and got shot down hard. And
yeah.
So they tried that and wouldn't. And I say the hell with that. Like, let's open, everyone is welcome. Your views are welcome. Your desires are welcome. There's no, you said something in the beginning I didn't get to touch upon, Reese, but I loved it, that in your own self-work, there is no good or bad.
Yeah.
That, you know, it just is. And I believe that so much because without good, there can't be bad. You can't have, you know, light if you don't have dark. You both things have to be true. And we have darkness in us. We have light
yeah.
in us. And that's who we are. And to acknowledge now we have the choices what we do and how we respond, but the first step is noticing and loving and embracing. And that's what I hope we create here. I know we will because that's where our heart is. So
yeah. Completely agree. And I think it is really unfortunate how I think taking off the mask is so terrifying because it is inherently an act of vulnerability, because it is inherently showing like your soft underbelly. And I think when other people who are clinging to their masks because they understand that that mask is also a shield, this is also a way to protect themselves, see somebody else throw the shield aside, it is threatening to your own mask. And so the gut reaction is to strike it down, right? To see the vulnerability and strike it down, because that means I can cling to what makes me feel safe. But safety is also smallness, right? And if you want to have both gratitude for this thing that has protected you, it's also a lot of like inner child work, right? And like, I know, Dennis, you're trained in internal family systems. And so I think there's a lot of echoes of that here too, where recognizing that, like me, for example, I have anxiety and OCD, and those things protected me for a very long time. Anxiety genetically, when we used to be hunters and gatherers and nomadic tribes, it's important to have more trepidation and hesitation around things. Now in our modern society, it doesn't serve us anymore. And I think our mask functions in a very similar way. For a long time, we all need a certain shield to protect ourselves because of whatever situation we were raised in, right? And all of us need to be protected from something, regardless of how beautiful and loving your family is. I was blessed with some of the most amazing parents in this world and still have trauma, right? Like that's just the way the cookie crumbles. And I think a really big piece of this work for me too is not just, okay, it's okay to take off the mask, it's okay to set down the shield. It's also recognizing when other people are doing it and applauding that and supporting that, as opposed to looking at that as an attack on my mask or an attack on the pieces of my mask that I am still working on deconstructing and breaking off, that it actually has nothing to do with me and everything to do with this person stepping into their wholeness, into their divinity. And I think that's also what we're trying to do in practice here, right? Is as we take off our masks and by putting it out there, hopefully celebrating this work, that encourages others to do the same without striking it down. Because we all, exactly like you just said, have this darkness. And I think for a really long time, for me, a lot of that was anger. I did not feel anger until I was maybe 23, and I'm 25 now. That was 2 years ago. And I have such a vivid memory of the first time I got angry. And I was like, oh, so that's what that feels like. What a crazy thing to have never felt.
Well, it wasn't safe for you, probably. Like,
right.
Being angry, my guess would be that you just had to, be the good girl, right? You had to, you don't make waves, you know, maybe you don't have the right to be angry because being angry takes up space. I don't want to get labeled. I mean, I don't know. What was your... Do you remember experiences where maybe you tried to get angry when you were younger and you got shut down like by your own self, or maybe like what was your experience with that growing up?
Yeah. I think, thank you for that question. Very gracious and thoughtful question. I think for me, a lot of my anger specifically was self shut down because I didn't think that there was time or space for it. And I think I have an older brother whose needs in being us children around the same time, his needs were just much more pressing than mine. And I think that's just very true within his own mental health and like childhood experience. But also that furthers this dichotomy of older male child, younger female child. And in many ways, I felt like a protector of him. And in me being able to take care of myself, that actually was allowing my parents to prioritize his needs. And so I think I restricted my emotions as a way to take care of him, to say, I'm good. I'm going to be fine. I don't need to go here or process these things because there's really not time or space for that. because all of the time and space needs to go to the more pressing thing, right? And I think while that was true in my early childhood life, that's also true of so many women. And it does not mean, like, a big part of my growth has now been like talking through this with my parents and them now making space for my really big emotions, which has been so healing for me. And I think also a lot of times that's not true in society, that women are just told it's easier if you take care of yourself and you do these things because external things are more important and we don't have time for your big feelings or your experiences because they're not important. These other things are important. And that's actually not true. But I think that is the narrative that is just communicated.
Oh, totally. And how, I'm just imagining you know, finally having this conversation after suppressing it for so long with your parents, the nervousness, but what I'm really curious, what did it feel like? It sounds like you were very validated and that's incredible. And you know, that's not always the case, right? I mean, oftentimes you could have very easily been shut down as well, but how empowering did you feel? How empowered did you feel afterwards? Like, what was that like? You had this conversation, it was received, you felt validated. Just one word, what did it feel like afterwards? Or a couple of words, I don't want to limit you, obviously, but I'm just curious, like, what pops, like,
yeah.
Like, can you go there in your imagination? What did it feel like?
I want to give the one word and then I want to give some context as well, but I want to answer that question first. Free. Free is the one word because it was like such a large chunk of mask that it felt like being able to say this was applied partially by me, but also partially by you. And now we all get to hold it together and love that piece together and bury it together. And say there's not space for that anymore. We don't need that anymore. Free really is such a good word for that. I also want to throw out there for listeners, I have been in therapy since I was 12 years old. So I think I want to acknowledge the privilege that comes with that. And my mom also has very similar background to Dennis, has her master's in counseling and works one-on-one with people for their mental health. So I also have a family that is already predisposed to being open to these types of conversations. And then on top of that, this conversation was ongoing for maybe 2.5 years until I felt like I actually got that full, we are like this burial of that piece of mask together with my parents. It happened bit by bit by bit, and it's really difficult because a lot of it is wrapped up in my siblinghood and my siblingship, but also in my being a daughter. And so it inherently puts the idea of my parents' identity in being parents in the conversation as well. And so a lot of it was identities, masks, arguing with each other's masks. And so I think that is part of why it took so long. And when that validation didn't happen at first, there was this breath of fresh air that was, but I always have the power to acknowledge and validate. However, there is the feeling of, oh, but it would be so nice if my parents were there along that journey with me. And slowly and surely, I have been lucky enough, and me and my parents have fought to have that relationship with each other that we now have, where we can talk about these things. And it feels like a very safe place for me to go home and truly not have a mask on. And I think that's really rare. But
It is.
Yeah.
That's so lovely. I mean, wow. What a beautiful, beautiful story. And to highlight just one thing I noticed, You said masks talking to masks, and so often, you know, from an IFS perspective, I'd say, well, we're parts are talking to parts, you know,
right?
You can call them masks, you can call, I mean, that's what I love about this. Like, there's no truth. Everything's a half truth in some ways. Like, you can, you know, they're all just models. They're, you know, all models are wrong, but some models are useful. A famous statistician, that was my past life, I was a statistician, used to say, And yeah, you know, what a lovely, beautiful story in terms of feeling that, but also pointing out that ultimately we are our own validation.
Yeah.
But it feels good to have others along the journey because, you know, others we love to be seen. I mean, to be seen for who we really are. And you know, what evoked in me when you were sharing that is I never really did get that opportunity with my parents to you know, and there's always parts of me that are curious. What would my mother feel right now? What would my father think of this? You know, what? And I'll never know.
Right.
Or I do believe that they're seeing this now anyway, in some capacity that I don't fully understand. But I do genuinely believe that. But even more so, I don't. I've reached the point where I no longer need that from them because I know I can't get it, but I gave it to myself in their stead. But even more beautiful to be able to have it done, to have it in real life, right?
Yeah.
You know, because now you have all these years to grow with them, to grow together. And to, it's just another, it's another ingredient in your soup, if you will, in terms of who you are becoming day by day by day as you
absolutely
continue to walk into your power and reclaim that power, because it's always been yours. You know that, but it doesn't feel that way. Right. And, but you're that's so awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Reese.
Of course,
I love hearing it.
Thank you for
what a fantastic,
asking.
Lovely story.
I think too, this, I think it was necessary for me to not feel the validation at first too. To have to go back and say, that's okay. I will always validate it for myself. And at the end of the day, if I only have me, I am still okay. And I think that really was the first step of kind of reclamation. And then now I just get to sit in gratitude for having parents that want to be a part of this and want to witness it. But also in hearing you talk about, you know, not being able to have this relationship with your parents and, you know, be able to maybe just in person have these conversations. What does that feel like as a father and as someone who is a parent now? And of course, I think we are all always children. And some days someday become parents. How has that impacted your story with this and this processing of it?
Oh, great, great question. Absolutely. I would, you know, my daughter is the light of my life. She's heading off to college after the end of the school year. So, you know, she's a senior. She's my one and only. Don't plan to have any others. But really in some senses, everything I do is for her. In the sense of I wasn't the greatest dad growing up. A lot of it was my, you know, they're having children is difficult. Having kids is difficult. Being neurodivergent and having kids is even more difficult because there's so many blind spots, you don't see what you see. And you mentioned therapy, and I obviously am a huge believer in therapy, but that's what really got me on this journey. That was the catalyst or the start of things was to start therapy. But to realize what I had been teaching my daughter through the way I would act and through my lack of emotion, which was a big thing for me, which is very common, for neurodivergent individuals to suppress their emotion or to, you know, for years I thought I didn't have emotion. You know, I could say for 30, I didn't cry at my mother's funeral. I didn't cry at my father's funeral. I pretended to, because that's what you're supposed, that was the mask. But inside I wasn't, I don't know what I was feeling. I was mostly numb, but I didn't cry. And, you know, I saw the same traits in my daughter and in terms of her holding in emotions I'm so, if there's one thing I'm proud of, I mean, I don't generally feel a lot of pride in general. It's just not an emotion that, for various reasons that necessarily come up for me, but I am proud of the way our relationship has changed and grown with my relationship with my daughter over the last 5 or 6 years to show her what a real man is, how a real man treats a woman, how a real man, you know, this toxic masculinity that's in our culture, that pervades our culture, doesn't have to be. And I don't even want to criticize. I mean, listen, we could sit here and bash on it, this, that, and the other thing. It's there for a reason. You have to have these, you know, sometimes you know, hurricanes exist for a reason. In, you know, we don't like them, you know, but they do serve a purpose. And even this toxic culture serves a purpose. My hope is to reframe and change how we see things. And sometimes the pendulum, you know, it's just a pendulum. It has to swing. But yeah, having a daughter, it was probably the thing that opened my eyes more than ever to the injustices and to the microaggressions and what I want for her. And I have to help build that world. Again, this is another one of those, just our relationship has changed so much over the last few years because I could be vulnerable all of a sudden. And, you know, that I can expose my neck and say, you know, this is, I mean, like I'm doing here, like we are doing here. This is vulnerability. This is real. And yeah, I love it. I love who I've become. I love who she's become. And I want everyone to have that freedom. I mean, now we all have work to do, but yeah, it is a beautiful thing. And when you can look back and say, wow, I don't even remember the person I used to be. That's an amazing, you know, that's an amazing thing. And I can honestly say that I don't know who that old person was, that old me. I love him and I appreciate him because I wouldn't be who I am if he wasn't who he was, if that makes sense. Like I had to go through the state of being the way that old man before I can become the new man.
Totally.
And every day I'm a new man. And that's why this is so important to me, because I want to saturate myself with like-minded, powerful women and people who have the same view. Not because I want to live in an echo chamber, but because that makes me better. That makes, you know, you, I want to be challenged. I want to be told, you're thinking, you know, this, I want these real conversations, because that's where transformation occurs. And for so long, I was scared of it. And who knows, that part may come up again. You know, yeah. Who knows what's so exciting about this, because it is pure vulnerability, but there's a strength in that beyond. And that's what I'd say for any men listening, don't believe the hype. The strength is in your vulnerability. It's not about vulnerability is so powerful. And try it, you know, try it safely. It just try it a little bit. Find somebody who you can be vulnerable with. And for women out there who maybe have men who can't be vulnerable and they love them, make sure that you can open the space for them to be vulnerable and look at parts of you that maybe might reject that because it's different. Because that can be scary too. I mean, what are your thoughts there? Like for from your perspective, Reese, and your relationship with men, like what is it like to be around a vulnerable, somebody who is willing to be vulnerable versus isn't? And tell me, can you tell? And I'm sure you can, but what is it like?
Yeah, I think it's such a fascinating question, because I do think vulnerability, like you said, feels like exposing your neck, but also while handing someone else a knife.
Ooh.
Right? It feels like you are saying, like, do it.
Yep.
Do it, right? And it's so utterly terrifying. But when someone trusts you with that, with their knife, it is the greatest privilege that I have ever felt, to bear witness to someone's vulnerability. With the people that I love most in the world. One thing that I love saying to my friends, especially in the midst of like, we're having a deep, intimate conversation and tears may be flowing. Of course, wine has probably been had.
It helps the tears flow sometimes.
Right, it does.
We need to get past those parts, right, that exactly. are trying to block things. So
exactly. But one of my favorite things to say is, it is my greatest honor and privilege to bear witness to you being you. And I think one of the most healing things for me was realizing that in me not handing my knife, if I'll continue the metaphor, to someone else, I am removing the ability to give them that gift. That is my greatest joy, is to be able to do that for people. And I'm not willing to give someone that feeling. It has to be mutual and it has to be an exchange. I think too, when we think about this masculine-feminine dichotomy here, one, patriarchy hurts everybody, including men. I think when you, as a man, are vulnerable, that can often be very scary to women who have been told you cannot be vulnerable in this way that like men are supposed to protect you. My words kind of stumbled there, but because of the messages that patriarchy tells us, if a man breaks down his mask first, I think that can be very threatening to women that have not been doing their work, because who's supposed to protect me? It can feel so unmooring. And I think that oftentimes that leads to women being perpetrators of the patriarchy against these men in their lives as well, and saying, oh my gosh, please don't cry. Because if you cry, then no one's here to protect me. Then I don't have this thing that I've been told I needed in a husband or in a father or in a brother, right? And so I think that there is this like vicious cycle where the masks that patriarchy puts on both men and women can cause women to perpetuate it as well. I think when a man who is finally starting to engage with vulnerability in this way, and that is exciting to a woman, that is when you see this safety, right? I think women are often told you can only do this in the company of other women. And for the large part, that's true, because that is where we find safety in these vulnerable spaces. But in allowing men to learn, Ursula K. Le Guin would call it the mother tongue, when they're trying to unlearn their father tongue and they're trying to learn the mother tongue, I think it does us all good to try and help them learn it. But if we as women are still speaking in the father tongue, if we see a man try and speak the mother tongue, that is deeply unsettling and threatening to our way of life as well, based on all of this socialization. That was a really roundabout way of getting there. But yeah, I don't know if you have thoughts about that as well.
You know, you got there perfectly. And what I took, or what really resonated with me, is this idea of, you know, I loved how you put the patriarchy, this patriarchal mask kind of puts women in this position where it is scary, perhaps, to have a vulnerable man, because I need, you know, you've been sold this bill of goods that you need somebody else to complete you, or to protect you, or, and I mean, we all need each other to protect us and to help us, but ultimately, a man, you know, you have these sort of micro transactions that occur. You know, as a man, I might be upset about something or feel vulnerable. I may lob a softball, you know, expressing in some small way my vulnerability, and then, you know, the immediate reaction. I'm very good. You know, part of being neurodivergent is absolutely being able to read the room at all times, because that's the only way you can be safe. So, you know, and recognizing that sometimes what you say isn't what you really mean, which often creates a host of problems, because you know what you're trying to say in your head. But I say that in way of saying, I'll throw a softball. A man may throw a softball out there, you know, with just a hint of vulnerability, but then the response they get dictates, do they go forward or not? What, and by response, it's, as you know, I mean, there's all these studies, blah, 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 but it's not even what's said. It's the tangible energy that comes in. Is there a fear that pops up? Is there, and I think there's also a, I mean, you know, men struggle with insecurity, and I mean, we know that. I mean, and that's why powerful women scare the shit out of men. I'll just put it out there. You know, like it's scary, and for a lot of men, because that's what they've been. You know, that's the insecurity. They genuinely feel like they're not good enough, I think, a lot of times, and so by showing any weakness, you know, now they're no longer desirable. And see, that is the vicious cycle that you mentioned, and the patriarchy, and how it does hurt men every bit as much as it hurts women.
Yeah.
You know, more or less, you know, how many angels dance on the head of a pin kind of thing.
Right.
And I think it, you know, it's just, even, you know, I listened to a lot of things, and there was this, this YouTube I was listening to had a call-in show kind of thing where, you know, somebody, a man was trying to assert that, you know, men are stronger. So, you know, it's the natural order of things, you know, and very, you know, very ignorant, but it's a view I could have seen myself espousing 20 years ago, let's say, when, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's the natural order, but it isn't. There are many, many, just because our Western society has become patriarchal, there are many very successful societies throughout history who have been matriarchal and have thrived. And yeah. And so for me, I love it. I love what you said there in terms of
and
you know, I think it's conversations we need to have because, you know, subconsciously, this is the, you know, Jung would say, like, is this part of our cultural, you know, it's in our subconscious that men can't be vulnerable.
Right.
And so women take that into their subconscious. And when a man is vulnerable in a micro way, they sense the energetic shift and they're scared of it. And so, yeah, I love it's a cycle. It is a circle. And how do we break that circle? Well, we notice it. I mean, you know, we're not trying to change the world here, but, you know, there's no solutions, but what we can do is notice it and choose at every opportunity. Notice when we ourselves are buying into this narrative. Like I notice even in commercial, I mean, it's everywhere. It surrounds you. And that's why I think it is so important, Cohere and having a collective and a community. This is how we win, by surrounding ourselves with like-minded people who are open, not an echo chamber, not a true space where it is safe to have your desires, to have, you know, to be who you are without judgment. With, I call it radical permission. Can we give ourselves radical permission to be who we really are? Can we do that work to dive in and say, I don't care if this is socially acceptable. I'm going to be who I am, and I'm going to trust that I will find my people. But it's scary because it can knock people out of your life. Like, so quickly. And you have to be prepared for that. I'm sure you've experienced it.
I think I want to go back super quickly to this, the vicious cycle of the patriarchy between men and women, and just add in one more thought that I think also having grace for everyone along that process is so important. That as men are practicing vulnerability, they're going to do it imperfectly. As women are meeting men in this place, we are going to do it imperfectly. Non-binary people who are exploring and experimenting their gender, or maybe have found a gender identity that works for them, are balancing the tension of all of this socialization, like having grace for the way gender and biological sex has been communicated societally, is we just have to start with grace when people are taking up the mantle of this work. And then I want to, the idea of radical permission, just like mic drop, yes, that. And I think the really scary thing is when you give yourself radical permission, that scares people who are not giving themselves radical permission. And this is something, like, literally there's a thing I'm going through in my life right now that I think Source is bringing me and pushing me to give myself radical permission to be the version of myself that Reese, honestly, 2 weeks ago would say is mean, is bad, is dark, is ugly, is hurtful, is harmful. But the universe and source keep sending me this message of it's not bad. It is actually deeply loving to meet someone, to give yourself the radical permission to step into the energy of your truth in that moment. That there is a way to be, quote unquote, dark with love. And there is a way to integrate this and alchemize it. And that is healing, yes, for you, but also for other people. And yeah, I don't know. I clearly am still trying to find the language around this experience that I'm going through, like literally right now. But I think that's another piece of this divine timing in us starting this podcast. It feels like it's another phase of shedding this piece of mask that is Reese is nice. What if Reese isn't nice? What if Reese is kind? What if Reese is truthful? What if Reese is mean? Does that mean I'm bad? Again, Reese 2 weeks ago would say absolutely. But also, what does mean even mean?
Yeah. Right. It's what meaning do you, you know, you brought up first of all, thank you for sharing that. And I'm honored. I am genuinely honored that to be a part of this transformation. I do believe that us doing this show and just showing up and being together, that's what we're doing here. We're just being together, not trying to sell anything. We're not just being radically honest with each other and radical, just radical acceptance of who we are. I agree with you. There is no dark. I mean, there's no what meaning do you put on it? Are you cruel? Well, Reese is cruel. Well, what does that mean? And to whom? And is it really cruel? Like who's judging that? What meaning is it? I mean, if as long as it's done in love, to me, love is the overarching thing. Sometimes we are who we are, and maybe that person needed you to be, quote, mean, or what, you know, in order to move them in another direction, to change things for them. And I think especially, you know, men don't think about being mean. Like it's just, even to say, oh, I'm mean, or I'm a, you know, men don't think about that. I mean, in general, I mean, maybe I can say, that's not something that's constantly on my mind. Oh, we all have thoughts of, oh, am I good? Am I bad? But, you know, or maybe that I think of lovely and unlovely is just mm-hmm. what I try to focus on. This idea of, is this lovely or is this unlovely? Is it something is this who I truly am? And some of these darker things, these shadow things, when you bring them out into the light and look at them, you start to realize maybe they're not as shadowy as I thought they were. They're here for a purpose. And it's just trusting in your own power. And, you know, I like to view, you know, the idea of a monarch. You know, sometimes you make decisions, you make edicts, you decide this is, you have that power to decide how it's going to be, right? You know, I mean, we're seeing it now in the US, right? Just all of this things going on, and I'll just leave it at that because this isn't political to me, but when you realize you have that own power in your life, the edicts of the queen are never wrong is sort of the way I view it. And that's how you have to, and it's self-trust, right? It's acceptance within yourself of saying, I am exactly who I am meant to be. There is no meanness. There is no good. I mean, we are inherently good. You are good. I am good. We are good inside. I believe that. I believe the self is perfect. The self is good. It is the divine, you know, the imago Dei, the divine image. But to even admit that you're wrestling, noticing that I'm wrestling with this idea of being mean. What does it mean to you to be mean? Right. So let's say you are being mean. Let's go down that rabbit hole and say, yes, I am being mean. I am being cruel. What does that say about me? Am I mean? No. Am I cruel? No. That's not who you are. And why, you know, and examining it and looking at it. And chances, you know, just in that exploration, there's so much value.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's what comes up for me, you know.
It's so, one, validating for me, and I'm sure for listeners out there too. But in this idea of like the divine monarch, one image that just came to mind is in The Princess Diaries, Julie Andrews has this brilliant line that I think we all, I should probably get it tattooed, but it's, a queen is never late. Everyone else is simply early.
And love it.
Even though it's like, well, that's kind of selfish. That's kind of disrespectful of people's time. Coming out of Julie Andrews' beautiful, lovely, loving image in her voice, it is the most divinely powerful thing that does not look down upon anyone else, but simply honors herself. And I just think that is so beautiful, in the energy that we can all try and evoke in this way. I love, too, you saying, I'm not ever thinking about being mean, right? Like, that's a really interesting distinction, that it's like, I am almost constantly thinking about, am I being mean? Am I hurting someone else? I am constantly running this narrative of, one, does this make me look bad? But two, also, is this hurting someone else? And inevitably, you are going to hurt people. We are human beings. We are made to be messy. We are made to take up space. We are made to be loud. So at a certain point, how much energy are you going to spend on fighting what you are and just allow? And I think even in hearing this, like, I don't really think about being mean. I'm constantly worried about this being mean. It also makes me think of something we've talked about a lot, and this idea that a confident woman is almost always going to be labeled a bitch, a witch, or what was the third one you offered the other day?
Or a demon.
Or all three.
Probably all three.
And it makes me think of, I'll evoke her name again, Lilith, because I heard a screech owl waking up this morning, and I ended up watching an Akashic Records video on YouTube today. And literally, it was one of the most aligned, like, random videos I'd ever seen. And the card that was pulled was the Lilith card, rebirth and honoring the darkness and the shadow self. And I was like, this is insane. Like,
yeah, that's too spot on. Like seriously, right? Like, come on,
like starting this today. Heavy-handed?
Like,
yeah.
But you know what? It's so lovely. And, you know, to go back on that theme in terms of, like, you know, we only started talking about the Lilithian energy and a couple of weeks ago. Like, I had no idea that was, you know, that something that I had been looking at, and that again, not coincidental. It was deliberate.
Right.
It was intentional by our greater selves, as I see it. And so, I love, you know, Lilith gets such a bad name because men are scared of women who are Liliths. And, you know, I saw a t-shirt that I wanted to buy, you know, be a Lilith, not an Eve. And again, this is not to say, oh, Eves are bad or Eves are wrong or anything like that. But it's this idea of, it's okay to take up space. It's okay as a woman to speak your voice. And this is, you know, I read this article and it's a little bit, it has to do with this idea of, is it okay for you to take up space? And for so long, I think for so many women, like, and the analogy was used is like, you know, and it's a little bit puerile, but I still think it gets the point across, and we can always delete it if we don't want it. But it's this idea that, you know, can a woman fart in a room? Like, literally, like, what, that is, and I'm not encouraging or discouraging that, but just
sure.
to be clear. But the idea is like, I don't know many women who would like actively walk in a room and acknowledge their presence in that way. Like, they
oh, yeah.
run to hold it in. I'm so men don't hold it in like that. I mean, some do, but men would think nothing about it. I can tell you, being with guys, like, which is not necessarily my favorite. You know, I have struggles sometimes, like in like with the bro culture, men, you know, and this is a great example of the patriarchy causing problems and for men. Like in areas where I should be super comfortable in broing out or whatever that looks like, I'm often very uncomfortable. But I can tell you, like, we used to play pull my finger, you know, and it was, but think about, again, to go beyond the childish, you know, nature of it, the fact, but it is, you know, sometimes the most base analogies are really true.
There's truth in that. Yeah.
Can you fart in the room? Like, is that, you know, metaphorically or even physically, like that's a presence, right? That's a woman saying, I am here, that I exist. And men don't have problems with that by and large. I mean, on average, and again, it's never individual cases. I mean, we know that, but yeah, that idea of, can you be seen? Is it okay to be seen? Do you feel safe being seen?
And I think also, like, as silly as this example may seem, it is actually deeply accurate in so many ways. Because, I mean, look at comedy, potty humor and aggressive humor and, like, politically incorrect humor is something that men comedians are prolific in. And when female comedians or women comedians first began kind of not being as cookie cutter and allowed to be and stepped into this idea of, no, I can be just as offensive, just as gross, just as whatever, it's like, ew, that's gross, that's weird, but it's funny when men do it. And I think it's similar with this farting in a room. Why is it funny when a man burps, but it's offensive when a woman does it? Like, and that is just a reality of our culture. And I think not only is it, why are women so uncomfortable being seen and being noticed, but it's also this, like, fart or burp or whatever is kind of gross and a thing that actively makes people around you uncomfortable. It's like, the reason why farts are gross is because they smell bad. But it's still funny when a guy does it, even though everyone else around you is now suffering. But it's still funny. But women would never. One, because they don't want to make those around them suffer, but also because of how it makes them look. And I think that goes back to this idea of the dual, am I being mean? But also, do people think I'm being mean? It's not just, it's the mask. It's not just how I feel. It is also how I am perceived. It is both of those things. I want to be mindful of our time, but I wanted to make sure also that we touched on this more. I mean, of course, we've talked a little bit about Lilith and esoteric themes have come in, but the tagline we've kind of decided on for the podcast for Bow Down is exploring esoteric and empowered feminism every week. And of course, Bow Down is emblematic of this idea of the queen, of the regal, of the monarch within all of us. And the reclamation of power for women. But Dennis, what does esoteric and empowered feminism look like to you?
That is a great question. To me, for me, and the way I see it is one. You stumped me. I'm thinking of, I want to engage my brain for just a second.
Sure.
To make sure I'm
absolutely
clear on this or that I articulate it. To me, when we talk about esoteric, right, for me, it's just an exploration. It's looking at energies or parts of ourselves, you know, parts of the collective consciousness that are interesting to us, that call to us, that give us some guidance in some form or another, which again is, but when it comes to the empowerment piece, for me, it's living as who you are, like the living, not living for yourself, for your desires, for your dreams. And to me, the esoteric is to really help you understand your dreams, to mm-hmm. and to offer new things that maybe you didn't even think about. Like, I mean, even with what we're doing here, you know, we had talked about for months, oh, what could we do? Oh, we could look at this. But then all of a sudden, boom, this clicked. And to me, that's empowering. It's to have, again, that radical permission to explore aspects. You know, we want to explore darker aspects of ourselves. Okay. So we can use other, you know, tools. We can use esoterica. We can use the occult. We can use, I mean, you can use scripture. You can, you know, it's not limited to, oh, it has to be, you know, there's 100 different ways you can use philosophy. You can use, there's so many different things. But for me, you know, I think there's a core, in my experience, the women I've known who I consider to be, who have demonstrated their power or shown, you know, I believe all women are powerful. So it's not, oh, the powerful women I've seen, but ones who walk in their power more consistently, I've noticed are believe in, you know, have a deeper belief, look to the esoteric. They look to things beyond themselves to say, but it's all in them as well. You know, that's the thing. Like, it's this fine, weird line between it is all within us, but at the same time, it's bigger than us, you know, and it's that, can you hold that? Can you hold space for those two things to be true at once? So for me, I want every single listener to genuinely see themselves as queen of their own life or king of their own life or whatever, you know, if you're non-binary, whatever, you know, there doesn't have to be a sovereign of their own life, let's say. But again, I just to make it clear, like, to me, this is about bow down. And so I use the word queen, but again, I'm not trying to use gender inclusive language, of course. So that, yeah, to me, it is about living the life that you dream of and exploring those dreams, you know, not living the life somebody else dreamed for you. So it took me a while to land the plane here, but I'll be pithy with that. So if I had a soundbite, it would be, to me, it's using all possible avenues to explore who you truly are and what you truly want, and then believing that it's yours and living it. That, to me, is empowerment. And it's easy to say, don't worry about what other people think. I mean, you know, blah, that's all true. But at the end of the day, you have to make peace with yourself. And you are ultimately, you know, you have to believe that you're the queen of your circumstance and of your life. You're the sovereign of your mind and of who you are. And that's what I want. And so bow down to me is such an appropriate, to me, it's not about forcing. It's not about saying you must bow down to me, or which I guess some people could, but it's about realizing that your greatness, your power, your sovereign, your queendom is inherent to you, and everyone does bow down in recognition to it in some ways. But can you bow down in recognition of it yourself? To know who you are, to me, that's what I want people to see. Like, because if you don't believe you're a queen, you can go around saying I'm a queen, you know, oh yes queen, left and right. But do you really believe it? Because I want to help people believe it, because I believe it, and that's, you know, that's what makes me dangerous, is that I actually fucking believe what I say. And you know, I think I have. That's what I. When you believe it, it's just part of you. So that's to me. But what about you? I'm curious how you see it.
Yeah, I agree first and foremost, and so yes. And I'll do the improv. Yes. And one of my advisors to my sorority in college, actually, which is interesting to think about in terms of womanhood and all of that. But she actually is also a life coach and does a lot of work. And she has this phrasing that I just think is so on point. And it is that she helps people be full of themselves. Like, to truly be full of yourself. And like, that is just such a great way to say empowered to me. That is, you are in your power. You are of your power. And I completely agree that bow down is Yes. The divine within all of us deserves worship from each other, but more importantly, from ourselves. And why has it taken me so long to worship at the altar of I am? Why do I still doubt that sometimes? And how can I continue to be full of myself and worship at that altar? Like, that is what I want. And I think this idea of worshiping an altar just feels esoteric to me. And I agree with what you said about it being different avenues. I think it's also about getting in touch with something bigger than ourselves that is also ourselves, right? It is recognizing, I mean, something else we both really love the languaging of is the great I am, right? That it is what I am. And it is in me, it is of me, like a cup of water from the ocean, that is still ocean water, and it is whole, and it is ocean in and of itself, but it is also so much more and so much vaster all around you. That to me is that I am-ness, and being able to recognize that your cup of ocean is also the vastness of the ocean, and your cup is worthy of your worship, your recognition. And yeah, I completely agree with the last little button that you put on that, that when you believe it, that like, that's the ticket, that's the juice, that's the stuff.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, think about it, if you don't believe it about yourself, why should anyone else believe it about you?
Yeah.
Like, and I love the idea, you know, we say, oh, you're so full of it. Right. I mean, that's an expression people might use, but I think we need to change that to, you know, you're so full of yourself. I hope in this space is a compliment. Like,
yes.
It's a, you know, we should be full of ourselves in that way without qualification. What would it,
yeah.
I mean, what would it be like to imagine literally being queen where people, whatever you said, I bet for a lot of listeners, they can't even do that. It's a challenge to those listening, and you know, maybe respond and let us know what it was like for you. Can you imagine a situation? Can you take the situation before you go to sleep tonight? Some situation in your life, whatever it is that's troubling you, can you close your eyes before you go to bed and just see yourself as queen of this situation? And if you were, just play the game. Let's assume. Let's assume that everything we're saying here is true and we're not barking up false trees. Let's say it's all true. Can you imagine what comes up for you? What do you notice when you try to imagine yourself as queen in this situation? Is it scary? Is it comfortable? Can you even imagine it? Does your brain allow you to? If not, why not? What would need to be true for you to imagine that? What would it feel like? Are you scared of it? Would you do something you think is mean, as we talked about earlier? Is it really mean? Is it okay to be mean? If it, you know, what is that? You know, what does that look like? I wonder if anyone will do that. I'd love to talk about that more. Like, what was it like to imagine for 5, 10, 15 minutes, literally queen of the world? Because you are queen of your world. And can you believe it? And if you can't, what needs to be true for you too? Because that's the thing. It's these limiting beliefs, right? It's this, you know, and you said it yourself. Why, you know, the great I am, but why do I struggle with this sometimes? Because everything in life has taught you otherwise. Like,
right.
Literally everything in existence, everybody. And then you have somebody, you have folks, you have a show like ours coming on saying, no, you should be full of yourself. Whatever what your desires are good. They're meant for you. I don't care what they are. You're good. You're perfect. You don't need to change. Like, you don't need to be quiet. You can fart in the room. This is our listeners can fart in our room. We're fine with that. You know, metaphorically.
But truly, but also if ever we are sharing space with you, yes. Like I is silly as that sounds, like, yes, please do it. Cause also I think it goes back to this. What an honor to be the room that someone would feel safe farting in, right? It's like, that is a privilege.
That's it how you know you've made, you're with people. You're with people who you can laugh about it. Because, I mean, you know, and again, it's such a silly example, but I think it's a good one.
It really is.
It is, because we don't, you know, again, we're talking, you know, people don't want to even talk about this. Well, in the same way, they don't want to talk about being full of themselves. Like, right. That's a good thing. Let's change the narrative, even if it's in this space, and let's uphold, you know, let's lift each other up and just, yeah, I don't know. This is, I love this, Reese. This is so incredible. Queen,
it's great.
Queen Reese. That's, you know, that I love it. I love it. I love
the,
it.
The and last it, thing I want to leave listeners with, is something that Dennis told me, actually. I was sharing an experience where someone once told me that I had a superiority complex, and Dennis's response was, good. You should. And
you should. I'll
I
say
think
it again.
That's what I want our listeners to have as well. I hope that you can work on your lovely superiority complex. Thank you all so much. If you are here, if you've been a part of it, gratitude for being in this space, being in our room. And yes, if you do end up having this little meditation moment that Dennis suggested, where you imagine yourself as monarch of your world, as sovereign of your world, and you have an experience, please share it with us in the comments down below, wherever you are consuming this content. Also, if you have any requests for future topics or things that relate to this idea of esoteric or empowered feminism, drop those in the comments too. We want this to be a space for us all to explore these concepts. Dennis, I am so excited to be on this journey with you and to see all of the wonderful conversations we can have. And even if it is, I trust that it will find its listeners, but even if it is just us having conversations, it will still be so rewarding for me. So thank you.
Oh, gosh, yes. This is like church to me, you know, in some very real ways, because it's real. And yeah, I just want to echo what you said so wonderfully, Reese. And, you know, we want to make this is for everyone out there. So what do you want to hear about? We can talk literally about anything. I'm pretty convinced. And it'll be fun, but what do people, what would be helpful? What would be useful? What would be lovely? And, you know, let's try to create this. Let's not try. We are going to create this community of people who are full of themselves in a lovely fashion, people who have a lovely superiority complex, and we will feed into that. And let's just watch what happens. That's all. Don't believe me. Just watch. You know, that's what I'll leave it with. You know, don't believe me. Just watch. You know, and see what happens. See what happens. So, Reese, as always, it is such an honor. This is, I just want to do like 5 of these in a row. Like, honestly, like I feel like we could have content for days. So, but to everyone listening, you are perfect. You are incredible, and you are superior, period. And you can't, there's nothing you can ever say or do that would ever make me change that. So, you know, be blessed, be well. And we'll talk to you next time, I guess.
Sending you all so much love.
Is a weekly podcast from the Coherent Collective that explores esoteric and empowered feminism.
Please subscribe to Bow Down wherever you may be listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. And if there's anyone you think would enjoy this episode, or maybe just needs to hear it, please share it.
If you want to stay up to date on all things Bow Down, you can follow the Cohere Collective on any social media platform at the Cohere Collective and check out other content and offerings at www.thecoherecollective.com.
If you're interested in working with Reese to find and pursue your purpose, you can head to www.thecoherecollective.com/life-coaching.
If you're interested in working with Dennis to shed your mask and embrace your desires, you can email Dennis at dennis@theheartstoybox.com.
A huge thank you to Jack Corbett for Bow Down's music. You can find him on Instagram at j.corbe. Thank you all for joining us today. We're so glad you're here.
And as always, we hope that you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.